At this museum, we not only have enigmas on display, but we have two that you operate. You can encode and decrypt messages, and you can actually see how they work. So we have people who come from all over the world to see our Enigma exhibit, largely because it's one of the few places where you can actually put one of the machines through its paces. And the Enigma is an amazing device. It's infamous in some respects because it was cracked by the Allies, the Poles in 1938, and then the British acting on that research in 1940, turning it into a 24-hour operation. So it really was not a perfect encryption device, but it could generate permutations of 3 × 10^114. So it was an amazing machine for its time. But what was even more amazing was that the Allies were able to break it, and it played a critical role in helping them to win the war.
We're speaking with Patrick Whedon, the curator of the National Cryptologic Museum. Besides Enigma, what you said earlier indicates that cryptology as an art or a science, I guess you can tell us which it is, goes back way before common wartime.
It goes back all the way to antiquity, and it is both, like so many disciplines, including broadcasting, both an art and a science. Probably the very first time that an individual or a group of people came to understand that there was information that they wanted to keep in the group and share it within the group, but not let it leak out to others so that it might cause harm. That's the beginning of cryptology, ways to protect critical information that you just can't keep to yourself, that you have to impart to other people, but you need to think of ways where you can impart the information so that it doesn't, cause you harm. And from that beginning, people begin to think up new and creative and ingenious ways to protect critical information. And it develops over time into the kinds of operations and programs that we have today to provide and protect America's most important communications.
So what are some of the other exhibits you have that are rivaling the Enigma in terms of their importance in the history of cryptology?
Well, probably one of the best ways you can judge a museum is to ask how many one-of-a-kind items do we have. And we have, I would guess, three or four that are really unique. Picking up on the Enigma, we have the last existing device, U.S. Navy device, that was responsible for decrypting the Enigma messages sent by the German Navy. There were over 100 of these at Nebraska Avenue. In fact, you can still see the building where they were housed when you drive toward Ward Circle and American University. But we have the last existing one, and it really is a one-of-a-kind artifact. Moving away from World War II, we have an 18th century encryption device that may have belonged to Thomas Jefferson. We don't know for sure, but there's a lot of circumstantial evidence that points in that direction. That is extremely unique. We have a signal flag from the Civil War, which was part of the wigwag system, which was developed by Albert Meyer, Fort Myers named for him. There are only, I think, three of those in existence. And my favorite is the purple analog. We have the actual device that decrypted the 14-part message that was sent from Tokyo to the Japanese embassy in Washington on the evening of December 6th and the morning of December 7th. Because of the effectiveness of that device, we had that message in our hands even before the Japanese code clerks, and that's on display as well. So there are many one-of-a-kind items, unique items related to the art and science of cryptology in our facility.
And, of course, today cryptology is all done electronically with algorithms executed by computers, and yet the crackers seem to stay up with the software programmers. And back in World War II, the mechanical decoders kept up with the mechanical encoders. So it seems like a continuous arms race throughout human history.
Over time, and this museum really is a testament to it. I would say there are probably three or four exhibits that really speak to it. Over time, there have been moments in history where, cryptologically speaking, individuals and organizations were faced with what appeared to be insurmountable challenges. And because the challenges appeared to be insurmountable, the people who were using various systems had a great deal of confidence that they were communicating securely. But the group that was charged with breaking the insurmountable systems didn't give up, kept working, and guess what? They were able to do it. Now, the key is that the first group goes on believing that they have a perfect system, and the second group is able to begin to get critical information. So time and time again, when you walk through this museum and you look at the various exhibits, that story is played out over and over and over, where Group A says, aha, we have the perfect system, everything is fine, and now we can communicate securely for the rest of time. And Group B knows, after a lot of very hard work, that that's not the case. And Group B will benefit immensely because of the assumptions of the first group.
Since cryptology is done electronically, have we come to the end of the line for physical objects that you can collect and put in the museum?
It takes a long, long, long time for devices that are involved in this kind of work to be declassified and to be brought into this facility on display. I have to tell you, sir, I don't get a lot of complaints about this museum. Most people love it. But the one complaint that I do get sometimes is, how come you don't have anything new in your museum in terms of, you know, being up to date? How come everything in there is over 50 years old, including you? And the reason is because you can't put sources and methods at risk. You have to be very, very sure that something is not going to affect present-day operations. So it is understandably a long, slow, arduous process, because if you were silly enough or unwise enough to put something on display that could have a detrimental or pejorative effect on present-day operations, that would obviously not be be wise. And so it's a museum where most of the artifacts are pretty old, but that's because in our business we have to be very careful.
So there could be some things we don't know about that one day will be available to you and you'll be there to pounce on them.
One of the thoughts that people didn't have a lot during World War II was, hey, wouldn't it be wonderful if this device that we're working with was saved for posterity? Now, there were some people who considered that, but most of the people were focused on winning the war, getting the victory, obtaining victory. So there wasn't a lot of thought about keeping these materials for posterity. Now, there's kind of been a sea change in that. People today have a different approach. So, yes, it is entirely possible that hypothetically speaking, some of the devices machines, whatever you want to refer to them, entities that we employ today to help us do our work, in time, that's a very broad general way of saying it, would certainly one day be able to be displayed. But it's not going to happen until people are absolutely sure, again, that it won't affect operations.